This is a special edition of the PC Gamer podcast. We're recording from the Showdown Land 2008 in San Mateo.
Can everyone hear Dan?
Yeah, can anyone hear me now? Hello, how about now?
Yeah,
that's okay. Much better.
So I have to make out with the mic, okay. So, we have up here, why don't we go around and introduce ourselves. I'm Dan Stapleton, I'm a reviews editor for PC Gamer magazine.
I am intern Andy Salisbury. Some of you may know me as intern Andy.
No.
Maybe.
I don't know who you are.
It's going
to
be like
I'm
that.
I'm Norm, I used to work for PC Gamer and now work for Maximum PC Magazine.
I'm Nathan Edwards from Maximum PC Magazine.
And I'm Evan Lottie, PC Gamer's previews editor.
Woo.
Yeah, previews.
Woo.
Yay, give it up for us.
God, I need you guys to follow me around everywhere and do that on command.
So we are going to be handing out some games here. We've cleaned out the PC Gamer offices and scraped together all the games we can gather. There's some old stuff in here and some new stuff.
Who wants Daikatana?
Yeah.
We have copies of EverQuest 2, if you guys are interested.
Collector's edition.
We need to get rid of those.
Masterpiece of the art form.
They are collector's items.
They're in like these big metal boxes. Yeah, anyway.
So the way we're going to do that is we're going to do some Q&A. And if you guys ask us a good question, you get a game. If you ask us a bad question, we shoot you with the Vulcan Nerf gun.
Candy. Candy's what's in it.
Looks like we have a question down here. I'm going to hop down and hand you the mic.
We starting the questions already?
Yeah, sure, why not?
Why not?
They want the free stuff.
Who doesn't? I do.
They're Fairweather fans.
Hi, my name's Thomas, and do you guys think that computer game demos are a dying breed?
The demos themselves? Like, are companies going to keep releasing demos?
Like 10 years ago, every single game would have a demo, and now it's like, you know, there's one good demo a year, and there might be a link between that and piracy. Who knows?
Well, what do you guys think?
I think we should get the gun ready.
I think you nearly escaped that.
I think it's a good question.
It's a really good question.
I mean, for demos, I feel like developers are much more focused on just getting their game out in time than, I mean, it takes a lot of effort to put a demo out, right? It's like,
It does take time away from the development cycle.
Exactly.
Is the thing, but you know, a lot of them come back later and do demos. I think the one I've heard recently that they're not going to do a demo for is Far Cry 2, and their reasoning for that was it's like such a wide open game. It's difficult to get a slice of the gameplay that's representative of the whole thing. So that's their rationale. It's probably also got to do with resources. But I don't know. There have been quite a few demos lately. I guess there was a Space Siege demo. What else came out? There were a couple that came out just recently, right? Help me out here.
Yeah, I can't really remember any, to be honest.
Spore demo. There was the Creature Creator.
The Creature Creator
was really good. Yeah.
Battlefield Heroes. Well, that's a free game, though. So.
For me, I guess like we kind of need like a standardized service. I mean, for Xbox Live, it's so easy, or PlayStation, it's so easy to download betas and demos.
Yeah, they're such a valuable tool for getting people introduced to games. I don't think they're going to go away anytime soon. I think that at least the games with the bigger budgets that can afford to do it will definitely do it, as long as it's practical. But yeah, it's. I think that you're right. There are fewer and further between than we would like. So, but
I was thinking what about the Steam free like TF2 weekends they do. Like,
right,
I think that's a really good like way to do it with like the service that's like standardized with millions of users. By the way, I'm Andy.
Yeah,
by the way, this is Andy Bauman,
our podcast producer.
Give him a round of applause, ladies and gentlemen.
All the way from Utah. He skied here.
he skied through Mormons to get here.
So that was a pretty good question. So how about Company of Heroes?
All right.
There you go.
You got a game, not a dart in the face.
This guy over here has his hands up for a while, so.
Games
Please,
like
ask
BioShock
bad questions.
And Spore, you're starting to see, I guess, problems with the DRM and how many activations you have versus, you know, Steam, which is, you know, kind of allowing you to download your games and not worry so much about, you know, what's it called, copy protection. What do you guys see as the future? I mean, is it going to go like the Steam route where everything's downloaded and, you know, you can kind of get all the reinstalls or, you know, kind of the way of like BioShock and Spore where you have like a certain amount of installs that you can max out at?
I personally want to hope that everything goes the route of Steam because I think it's a great service. Like, I really do. Everything's out there. You can go download your games anywhere you go on any machine, and they keep track of it that way. And given that you can't start the game without starting up the system, you know, it's all pretty standardized. Whereas Spore is just, it's, I don't know. I don't know a whole lot about it, but I know it's not bad news. I know we talked about it recently on the podcast. I think Kristen mentioned it, didn't she?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about like our past three podcasts here, actually, for a pretty long time. But, I mean, ideally, like down the road, we're going to have, I mean, the PC, thing about PC, the best thing about PC is it's an open platform, right? We all know that. It's customizable. You can tweak it to your heart's content, but you don't have a standardized platform for delivering content. So we have these, you know, these services like Steam, like Impulse, like EA Downloader, and ideally we'll have, you know, not just one of those services like Steam, which is we'd probably agree is the best. We'd have a few that, you know, are in competition that have different standards, so the industry can figure out what's best for DRM and security for the consumer and for, you know, companies. And we talked about it last week actually for sports, like. For EA, they're obligated to their shareholders to protect their game. They understand what the issue is for the end user, like how inconvenient that is, but at the same time they have to appease the people that own the company, like on the business side. So it's
we are seeing a lot of pushback from gamers right now for EA, and EA is you know making some compromises. They are putting out a tool that will allow you to revoke an activation from like Spore and Crysis and all the games they're putting out that have these activation limits, and you know we're all hardcore gamers, so we understand that it's potentially problematic when we upgrade our PCs, it can cause another activation to be spent, and then you have to call in and you know ask very nicely for another install. So I think it's gonna take a while, but it's gonna balance out until they find something that you know satisfies both parties. It's gonna satisfy EA and their shareholders that they're taking steps to protect their games from piracy, even though it doesn't really work. But also will satisfy gamers that, you know, that they'll be able to use their games a few years down the line. And BioShock in particular, they have removed the activation limits. You still have to activate online, but you can activate as many times as you want. So I'm thinking that EA will probably follow that same pattern. Like a year down the line, maybe they'll turn off the install limits just to make sure that people who paid for their games can still do it. They haven't said that they're going to do that, which is kind of, you know, it would be nice if they would.
I mean, we've kind of seen an interesting like hint of progress with EA, at least, specifically. They released Crysis and Crysis Warhead on Steam, even though they have their own service for distribution. So that's interesting. They're probably trying something out there. So
I don't think that was a deal with EA. I think Crytek
really? Okay.
Made the deal.
No, actually, it was EA that did that, yeah.
Well, still, when you do Crysis Warhead on Steam, there are activation limits.
Yes, there are. Mm-hmm. It still does use Secure ROM for that. So that was a pretty good question. So how'd you like a headset?
Blizzard didn't hear it. His headset broke. So isn't that just a happy? Just
no.
We're making smiles it's happen, ladies and gentlemen.
Talk directly into it.
As you know, Crysis Warhead and Crysis War was released this week. And it was actually $23.99 at Fry's. And the guys that designed, they were at Envision 2008, and they said they wanted it to be affordable for everybody, so that's why they released it at a low price. You think other companies would follow that?
Just as far as low pricing on games? You know, we as gamers can hope, but the fact of the matter is, too, it's a very standard pricing model that you see. It's usually, you know, the game's about $50, and then the expansion's around $35, but
ever they wanted to discourage that.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a confusing point to hit a middle ground, because if they're lowering the price because it's pirated, then you know there it almost feels like something's wrong there. But at the same time, for those of us that you know buy legitimately, it's nice.
Well, one way to look at it is Warhead is kind of a standalone expansion for Crysis. So their investment for that engine. You know, they made that already with Crysis. So to create a standalone expansion is much less expensive for them. So they can afford to price it lower and still make a profit there. If they priced Crysis at $30, it wouldn't have worked for them because, you know, they spent, I think they said they spent, what, $22 million to make Crysis? So they have to make that back.
Which I think they did.
Yeah, they did say they did okay on it. Not as well as they would have liked, but they did okay. And you know, they do complain a lot about the piracy because you know, they say as many as like 15 or 20 to 1 pirated copies are out there compared to legitimately purchased ones.
All right, just for convenience, do you guys, is it okay if we like make a line for questions so nobody feels like they're left out maybe? Is that okay?
Because we see a lot of people with their hands up for a while. We don't want anybody to feel like they got looked over or anything.
So Dan doesn't have to roam.
Why don't you guys line up like over here?
Left side of the stage. Right. Thank you.
So the guy with the bat belt go first because he's been waiting for a while.
This guy.
That's a sweet belt.
Which one?
This gentleman right here. He's had his hand up for quite a while.
Hi, guys. Also love the podcast. Been listening to it for a long time. Two short questions. First on the EA Sport part. The EA Sport part, does the revocation be able to do after? Because I never remember to install until after I reformatted the system. So the first thing. And the other one was, the question is, since you guys have a bit more connections, I'm pretty much a laptop gamer due to my work. So have you heard any movement on like PCI cards that add to the graphics ability recently?
I guess the last one first. Norm and Nathan, you're on Max PC. Have you seen anything like that? I mean, I know there was something a while ago about external graphics adapters.
Yeah, Asus has some. Yeah.
Right.
We haven't received any in the lab yet to test.
Yeah. They haven't really caught on that well, have they?
Not particularly.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure about those.
Yeah, Coach Logan was here.
I guess we don't have any specific benchmarks on those.
I mean, hopefully. We did run a feature in our Spore issue, I think, on laptop gaming, like three tiers of laptop gaming, you know, high-end, middle-end, low-end. So that gives us, you know, some details about how it can be done and whatnot, but... As far as hardware, we hope people will pursue it because it's a lot of things. It's something a lot of people do, I think, just for convenience. It's what I do usually.
And I just bought an MSI Wind, you know, the sub notebook, and it's great for playing like really old classic games. Like
Fallout 2.
I'm playing Fallout 1 and 2 on it, XCOM, and you know all the golden oldies. And it works really well because it's a 1.6 gigahertz processor, so you can still go back and play like all the really great old games. So.
Awesome. Thank you.
How's it going, guys? My name is Justin, and I just had a really simple question. It goes out to both hardware and software. How do you come up or compile what to review, when to review it, and do you ever feel like companies are biased towards certain magazines, and they'll say, oh, could you review this, because they know they'll give, like, a soft review?
I don't think anyone takes for granted that they'll get a soft review from us. I think it's pretty well understood that if we don't like something, we'll say something. We've had companies give us... Like, say, Cooler Master. Well, they give it to us to review. They don't give it to us, like, as a... Well, if we... if there's something
it works both ways. Like, there are a lot of products, you know, if we know there's a new video card coming out, you know, we'll work with companies so that make sure we get samples, you know, so we can have a timely review. Sometimes they don't send us stuff because they have limited supply, and whenever they send us stuff, it's expected that we send it back anyway. So sometimes we do go out and buy, you know, hardware that might not be so easily accessible to review.
And
we think that's something that the reader is interested in.
As for games, we try and review everything. So it's not like, you know, giving special benefits to one publisher or another for getting us a game. And we try and do everything that we can, at least all the major stuff. You know, there are like little adventure games and things like that that are smaller markets that we try and get in if we can fit them. But, you know, there's never any arrangement with any publishers for scores or anything like that. The reason they give us an exclusive would be because they know that our readers are some of the most hardcore gamers out there, and they know that that's going to get them the most attention for their game. And you know, we do it because we want to give you guys stuff that you can't get anywhere else. So it's a, you know, mutually beneficial relationship, but it's not anything that anything is being promised to anybody.
So. Plus, PC Gamer has the policy of never review anything unless it's final.
Yeah, we did recently restate our reviews policy where we're only reviewing gold code, so only what you guys get in the box.
Yeah, great question though. Thank you. Yeah.
Speaking of which, would you like Company of Heroes or Supreme Commander or Flight Simulator X? All right.
I think some of our copies of Supreme Commander are actually signed.
Yes, by Chris Taylor.
A couple of them, yeah.
All right, hey guys, my name is Repaul. I have a question about what you guys think about the PC gaming industry in general. I've seen some stuff lately. I mean, I know every 5 years or so they say there's the death of the PC gaming, all that kind of good stuff. But lately I've been, you know, there's been all these DRM issues, people talking a lot about how much piracy is affecting the industry. And then I've been seeing that EA is saying that FIFA 09 has been graphically reduced or something for the PC version because it can't compete with the console version. And then I heard Star Wars Force Unleashed is not being released on PC because of, I guess, there's too much physics calculation stuff that PCs can't handle, supposedly. So I just wanted to know what you guys felt about all of that kind of stuff going on.
Well, with Force Unleashed in particular, their issue is that all the physics and things like that wouldn't be able to run as well on a low-end PC, and they're trying to shoot for a broad spectrum, and if they feel like there's not enough customers in that spectrum, then they're not going to release it. It's a business decision for them. But at the same time, I mean, there's still a lot of great stuff coming out for the PC. I mean, even if it's cross-platform, it's still coming out on PC, and I personally like Fallout 3 is going to be coming out across 360, PS3, and PS3 and PC. I'd much rather play it on PC because, I mean, it's you know, kind of a shooter, so I just much prefer the mouse controls, and it costs $10 less on the PC, and it's going to look better. So, you know, it is like the hardware is going to cost you more on the PC for a high-end experience, but you know that's why it's a hobby. I don't think, yeah, and they've been saying PC gaming's doomed for the past 10 years, and it's just not.
So. I mean, we're definitely in a transitional period. I mean, the rise of sort of casual gaming, that popularity and how successful it's been, is an incentive for developers to put more resources into that. You know, put more teams and studios on developing Wii games, for example, because they know it's going to make money. It's cheaper. It's faster. But at the same time, I mean, what other platform has such allure as a hobby? I mean, that you can customize, that you can like have an intimate relationship with your PC. Kind of is the way I like to describe it with people. You can't have that situation with your Xbox, right? Like you can't really know your Xbox and feel comfortable with it. And I don't know.
Take it to dinner.
Yeah, exactly. You know, dress it up.
That's your Xbox will not love you.
Every Xbox looks and performs the same, and that's one of the things that people love about PCs.
Yeah.
You look around here, look at how everyone's PC looks different, and it's beautiful, man.
You guys see
beautiful.
That guy with the spinner?
Yeah, like that's an awesome case.
It's amazing. And real quick on the it's case beautiful. Of sales, I think that I'm not sure that sales are doomed, because with games like that, at the World of Warcraft Burning Crusade launch, you know, there's tons of people lined up around a building for an expansion of a game. And sure, that's kind of an exception because it's just a wildly popular game. But, you know, when I see stuff like that, I still hold out hope, because there's also the fact of digital distribution, where people can buy stuff online and it's quick and easy, like how we mentioned Steam earlier. So I don't think sales are going to be something that really troubles, because there's always that small amount of people out of a representative group that can give the whole group a bad name, you know?
And look at it this way. There's you know, $1 billion a year being made by World of Warcraft. There's a healthy haul with everything else. If they stop making PC games, they'll be leaving all that money off on the table, and that's just not good business.
Yeah. Awesome.
Great. Thank you very much.
Great question.
We need some bad questions. This gun is underused.
I want to shoot somebody.
It's getting cold.
I'm going to be honest.
All right. Hey, guys. So recently we heard Crytek is not going to be making PC exclusives. A lot of companies are now not making the high-end games that we used to see on PC, these groundbreaking graphical things. So are we seeing the end of high-end performance PC exclusives? Are we left with low-end MMOs or procedurally animated things like Spore and Audio Surf? Because you don't see those games coming out as much anymore.
I mean, I'm not sure. I mean,
well, first of all, don't badmouth Audio Surf, because that guy made it. So.
Oh, yikes. Oh, yes.
We have our first victim.
I prefer to think he volunteered for that.
But, is that the only option to make a profitable game
anymore? Well, it's, yeah. Like I said, with leaving money on the table, if you make a game exclusively for the PC, you are leaving a lot of money on the table that you could have gotten with the console sales. But there are certain things that only the PC can do. You know, and like RTS controls. I still don't know how they managed to get Supreme Commander on the Xbox, That just doesn't seem to make any sense to me.
I know. What shame is it that Ensemble's last game is going to be Halo Wars on 360? Like, right. That's so sad, guys. I mean, what's going to happen to Age of Empires? I'm really stressed out about it.
A moment of silence, please.
What's that?
Okay, moment of silence for Ensemble. All right, good work.
But you know, at the same time, I mean, we're still seeing smaller exclusive, like PC exclusives, like Sins of a Solar Empire is a good example. Demigod, you know, those are a couple of Stardock games. You know, they're still very PC focused. So that and you know, Valve, I guess they're not PC exclusive anymore, but they're definitely PC lead. So you know, that's at least, you know, a benefit to us.
As long as Google isn't buying them, right?
And, oh, gosh. And because of your bad question, you get a copy of Doom the movie.
Hi, guys. Brian Sobrowski, a.k.a. Zansky.
Zansky.
I had a question about hardware for the Max PC guys. Do you think that we've gotten to a point where we are almost at a stagnant point in the hardware development? Because, like, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, you couldn't have the same graphics card for over, you know, 18 months and still expect to run the best games at the highest, you know, setting. You know, I bought an 8800. I mean, it feels like almost two years ago, and I can still play Crysis, you know, really at a very high setting and getting a playable frame rate. And nowadays, you know, you're seeing games just not, I mean, it has to tie in with the other guys' questions about visuals and in games and hardcore games. Are we seeing that stagnant in the hardware section now too, with the GTX 280 and NVIDIA having that just overpowering control of the hardware?
As far as overpowering control of the hardware, have you seen the Radeon 4870 X2? Yeah. That kicks the 280's ass, frankly, and it's bringing ATI back into the fold. But to answer your question, I run an 8800 GTX, and I'm kind of relieved that I can still play games coming out.
I'm not saying that it's a bad thing. I'm just saying, like, in this generation we're in now with the Wii titles and with, you know, this casual generation, is the hardware not being pushed? Is the game's not pushing the hardware this generation like previous generations?
Far Cry 2.
I mean,
optimization obviously is a big part of it, and when you get consoles or games that are, you know, all on Unreal Engine 3 and they're all super optimized now, you know, they're all going to run pretty well on like an 8800, but you're not going to be able to do it at 2560 by 1600 with 4X AA and 8X AA, you know, the filtering, unless you have, you know, there's still good reason to buy like a 280 or two 280s. And, you know, as prices go down, I think it's just going to get better.
Well, we're going to see the games that push that hardware.
I think so. I think
we're like, still seeing
with
those.
Rage coming out next couple of years, that looks amazing. And, you know, John Carmack's talked at length about, you know, his ideas for, you know, beyond, he's still on like DX9 technology basically, but he has a lot of ideas of what we can do, you know, in with this megatexture technology and stuff in the next, you know, 2 years.
And Crytek is talking about what they're working on, like, for an engine that would come out in, you know, 2011 or 2012. So, I mean, they're still, you know, definitely going to push things forward. So hardware for the hardware guy, headset.
Hey, what's up, guys? First of all, Audio Slave, or Audio
Whoa.
Surf. Audio Surf.
Oh, right in the neck.
Audio Surf is like crack. I couldn't stop playing. I just got it like 20 minutes ago, and I've been playing since. Anyway, my question, going off of DirectX 9 and 10, and apparently 10.1, which nobody really cares about. Anyway, do you guys think that Linux or Mac will step up to the plate and do some hardware kind of driving system for the software? Some of my friends are like, man, Windows Vista kind of bogs down the system, uses a lot of resources. I wish I could just go in a command prompt, you know, DOS or whatever, and run it, but it requires DirectX 10 to kind of drive the system. Do you guys think anybody's going to step up to the plate and do something?
And how many things actually require DX10? Pretty much nothing.
Not much anymore.
Assassin's
Halo
Creed,
2?
Maybe? I can't remember.
That didn't require DX10. Shadow that required Vista. That's right. Yeah.
I'm not sure. The only frame of reference I have, we were playing in a TF2 tournament. One of our opponents was using a Mac, and he crashed. That's the only thing I know about, really.
I think the Mac architecture, when we talk developers, it's really hard to develop on a Mac because the OS isn't wasn't coded for gaming, and there are a lot of there's a lot of overhead. It's same thing with Vista too. There's something interesting that I think AMD just released, and I'm not sure. I don't game on Linux. I don't have a neck beard.
Right. People don't really game on Linux because nobody's developing for Linux. Very few people are developing for Linux, and
it's a market share issue, isn't it? I mean, there's a very small percentage of people using Linux. I mean, it's growing, but it's relatively small. And same thing with Macs. It's less than 10%. So I mean, you're going to want to go for the 90% of the market that will buy your game.
But yeah, just as far as the optimization of the DirectX 10 cards and 10.1, which whatever. Do you think there's going to be anybody else other than Microsoft doing that kind of stuff, or you think that's going to be
Microsoft
for the rest?
Microsoft owns it, so I mean they're in the best position to optimize it. I mean, like I was going to say, AMD, they released the tool Fusion, I think, this past week, and that is supposed to optimize your game experience on your PC by turning off all the processes that Windows doesn't need to run your game. And so that's an example of a graphics company trying to optimize gaming.
I mean, again, not to bring up consoles, it's sort of a weird situation for Microsoft because, they're doing well with their console, so it's sort of in their interest to not split their market to some extent, right? I mean, even though the Xbox was sort of codenamed the Direct Xbox, and they're sort of supposed to be carrying over technology from that. But, yeah, it's kind of awkward having them be such a big platform holder for the PC today.
So here, have a Microsoft game, Gears of War. All right, we've got time for like one or two more, and then we're going to bring up Dylan Fitterer.
Sure. Hi, my name is Kerry. Thanks to everyone who puts on Showdown Lands, PC Gamer, Maximum PC. Special thanks also to all the sponsors who sponsor events, BFG,
it's here for the sponsors.
Patriot Woo. Memory.
Yeah, sponsors.
Basically, my question was, can we expect future Showdown Lands?
Yeah, yes. Gosh, I don't know. Is Mike within hearing distance of us? So that's our events manager.
None of us are on the events planning team, so we don't actually know. We just show up when we can.
It's not our department.
Probably.
I'd certainly like to think so. We're doing three this year, in Illinois, in Massachusetts. Illinois one's next week, I think, in Peoria.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. So I'd like to think that because we're doing three, it's a good situation for us. I love doing it. I love coming out here and seeing you guys. It's fantastic.
I'm sure as long as you guys keep coming out, we'll keep putting them on.
Yep. Yeah, this one looks like it's been a pretty good success here. So, if something's successful, you keep doing it.
We'd be fools not to.
All right, this will be the last one for a little while. Sorry, guys.
The name is Michael. I'm wondering, how do you guys feel about Activision and coming out with, new Call of Duty games every year, and what's that going to do to the fan base? And
I totally got this one, guys. Okay, so I mean, there's kind of been a trend over the past few years of people hating on EA. I feel like because of their business practices, because their sports games are just kind of roster updates. A lot of people think, but honestly, okay, Activision is the biggest publisher and developer out there right now after acquiring Blizzard and Vivendi, right?
Well, it's kind of the other way around actually, but it's a merger.
Well, okay, it's a merger. So together, they're the biggest dog in the house. And I kind of view them as also one of the most risk-averse companies out there. I try to think of what they've released in the past year. They've done two Guitar Hero games, which they've said they're going to release three next year, apparently. And, a very quick, I think, probably 10 or 18-month developed, Call of Duty 5, which... a different developer. I guess they announced that.
Well, it's Treyarch that's doing that.
Yeah.
They were the ones that did Call of Duty 3 for the PlayStation. I guess did it come out on the PlayStation? I don't know, but it was
Xbox
on the Xbox
360, I believe.
I mean,
I know that those guys wanted to put that out on the PC, but they just they when you're working for a publisher, you just don't have the option, and they were rushed on that. So, I'm actually looking forward to seeing World of War because it does look pretty promising. It's using the Call of Duty 4 engine and all the same technologies behind that. So, maybe this one could be great. Who knows? I mean, Treyarch could prove themselves to be a good alternate developer for the franchise. And as long as they're putting out good games, it's only good for the fans, right?
At the same time, I mean, just speaking for myself, I would have liked to seen . A decent expansion for, I don't know if they're going to do an expansion for Call of Duty 4. That would have been nice to see, right? Because the single player was nice, it was a little short, but it was so well crafted, I thought.
Yeah, well, I mean, they've said that Infinity Ward is going to be working on a new Call of Duty next year.
They're doing six, yeah.
So, you know, maybe they're just ignoring expansions in favor of putting out full price games.
I guess so, if that's their business model. I mean, I don't know. I'm just so skeptical about Vivendi. Like, when Activision merged with Vivendi, they sort of let Ghostbusters and what was the other game they let go?
The World in Conflict expansion. Yeah. It was called Soviet Assault. Although those games are still going to be published, it's just not by Activision. So they're currently looking for a new publisher.
Yeah, so I don't know, I'm personally a little skeptical about what their long-term and short-term goals are, I guess. But yeah, good question. Thank you.
I don't know. We were just asked on why Bad Company wasn't ever ported to PC or put on PC. And I frankly don't know. I mean, probably just has something to do internally with EA.
Yeah,
exactly. That was
right. I think they're just trying to expand the franchise into a console area where they can sell a lot of it. Because I mean, Battlefield as it exists on the PC isn't going to work on the console. So they're making like a spin-off of it that's console friendly and console oriented. They had a version of Battlefield 2 that it wasn't actually Battlefield 2. What was that one called that they put out on console?
I can't remember though.
Yeah, there was some Modern subtitle Warfare, to was it, but it wasn't the same game.
Well, I mean, you could say the franchise as a whole. They're doing Battlefield Heroes as well on PC. That's, I mean, two totally different new directions for the franchise, I guess. So right. I guess they're just trying something new.
And that's not coming out on the consoles.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's bring up Dylan for a quick Q&A. I know if you guys know Dylan Fitter. He's the creator of AudioSurf. Let's give him a hand. I mean, he did a presentation here last night. I don't know if you guys saw that, talking about the development of AudioSurf, but we wanted to do a quick interview with him just in case you weren't here for the presentation or if you're not here at Showdown, you're just listening on the podcast. I mean, if we talk about PC gaming and people say it's dying, but AudioSurf is a really great example of just a really inspired game and one guy working on it and having huge success. So first of all, congratulations, Dylan, for creating such a fantastic game. Do you want to first talk about how you got from the idea of AudioSurf to how you got it on Steam and what, the whole story? Just briefly. We're on the show.
All right. Well, thanks so much for making me a part of this, guys. This has been a blast here at Showdown. AudioSurf came from a lot of work. I mean, the presentation last night, I showed some old screenshots. It started off as a first-person shooter, and then it was an on-rails shooter. And I'm now speaking directly into the mic. And it finally came together as a music game that analyzes any song in your music collection, which when I finally hit that piece, I knew I really had something. And deadline for the Independent Games Festival was approaching. That was a huge motivation to really polish it up and make it something that other people could enjoy. And then Steam gave me a call and said, hey, we want to sell AudioSurf. And I said, of course, yes. And they said, we want to include the Orange Box soundtrack. Yes, great. They said, we want you to be the first person to use the Steamworks API and get achievements on Steam. Yes. So we just got a huge amount of support from them.
So how has that changed your life?
It's been very successful, yeah. Well, now I can focus entirely on what I want to work on. So I don't do any contracting on the side anymore, so it's a huge difference to me.
What type of training do you have or work experience did you have before making AudioSurf?
I did a lot of work on serious games, low-level stuff. I did a physics engine for a couple of products over in Europe, and I did a lot of Flash games, too.
And what would you say, if you had to give an aspiring independent developer some tips, what would you tell them?
I think the most important thing is to set some really short deadlines. I did that with bestgameever.com, and I released a free game every Friday. So I just had this deadline over my head constantly. I had to finish something. It didn't have to be perfect. It didn't have to be the best game ever. I just had to finish something. And that got me over a lot of my blocks and got me to try new risky things, and I discovered some great stuff that I wanted to pursue.
So why is it that you did put it out on PC rather than the consoles? I mean, it seems almost really well-suited for Xbox where you can access a media library.
Basically, it grew up on PC, and then I released it on PC. It was just sort of, that's the path of least resistance. PC is my favorite platform. That's where I work. That's where I play. And
excellent applause line there. But, so what other, like, in the industry, what areas are you looking forward to? Like, what games that have been announced are you looking forward to playing? What looks like it has the same kind of innovative spirit as AudioSurf?
Actually, I just played some Multiwinia this morning. I highly recommend checking it out. It's a sort of an arcade RTS. They took out all the hard parts, so it's simplified, but it still has deep strategy. You should definitely check that out on Steam.
And I imagine you follow the independent game scene pretty closely, right?
Yes, we're actually pretty close in touch with each other. I met a bunch of developers at the Independent Games Festival, and we all stayed in touch. We're kind of a close community. It's pretty cool.
Have you got any other picks that we should watch out for? What's the next AudioSurf?
AudioSurf 2.
Oh, boy. I know Flower is going to come out pretty soon. I think that's on PS3 only, so I shouldn't have mentioned that. Braid's coming out for PC soon. Check out Braid.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Have you seen the Soldier Boy review of Braid?
Yes.
I've got to say though, if we could hire one more person, it would definitely be a rapper to help us review games for sure. That'd be excellent.
What is your favorite song to play in AudioSurf?
It's a really tough question. I like a lot of songs. Anything by Tool is really good. I like Eternal Life by Jeff Buckley. It's a really good ride.
So what do you think you'll do next? I mean, you said you get to work on whatever you want. What do you want?
Oh, right now I'm still just adding new stuff to AudioSurf, and I'm going to continue with that for a while. That's where my brain is. I'm just working on that.
So yeah, I think we're just about out of time. They might put the clock up again. What's the next event we got lined up?
Yeah. There's something else important. Right. We just.
Yeah, we still have a bunch of games to give out, though. So. All right, hold on.
I wish we had some trivia to ask, but we're not that prepared.
We just make stuff up. So who wants an activation code for AudioSurf?
Come on up.
All right.
Come on up.
I was actually just going to literally throw them out.
Frisbee.
I'm going to aim for people. If you get one and don't want it, give it to somebody who really wants it. That's right. That's my gambit move.
That Storm and Norman.
That went way everywhere.
Oh.
Where's the wireless mic?
Oh, so close.
We got one more comment we want made here.
I'm a real big Star Wars game fan, and I really felt betrayed when LucasArts turned its back on its original fan base with Force Unleashed, but I played it. I know why they didn't release it for PC, because we would just laugh at it. It's just a third-person button masher. You're not missing anything.
That's good to know.
Excellent.
He didn't give it a percent.
Who wants Lineage 2?
4%. Force Unleashed on VC. Guest review.
Doesn't Force
Unleashed have like 10 kinds of middleware in it? It's basically middleware of the game. I don't know. It's weird.
Does everybody here have an issue of PC Gamer? That let's see. Yeah, this is the spore issue.
We still got a lot of stuff. Can we take more questions? Are we out of time?
No. So I think we might still have a little more time. We can take a couple more questions.
Until they drag us off.
Absolutely. Yeah. You guys got questions?
Yeah, let's take some more questions. That was just a screensaver, the clock, I promise. So we're fine.
So go ahead and feel
Anyone
free to form the line within aiming range of the gun.
All right. I was just saying, do you think some companies are running out of ideas for new games? Like, for example, you got the Call of Duty series, and they had World War II for a while, and then Call of Duty 4 is a little new, but they're going back to World War II. You know, I'm wondering, maybe they're coming back because they lost some of the fan base, or are they just running out of ideas?
I don't think they went back to World War II because they lost the fan base, because I think everyone loved Call of Duty 4. I think they wanted Infinity Ward to work on the Modern Combat stuff, and I think Treyarch was working on Call of Duty World at War long before they knew Call of Duty 4 was going to be a success, right? They had 2 years to work on it. In terms of like the gaming industry in general, no, I mean, you see things like the independent developers, you know, Braid and Audio Surf, Everyday Shooter.
And Portal.
And Portal, yeah, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we definitely see trends and, you know, MMO, a lot of people latching onto the MMO theme.
Fantasy MMOs.
Doing, yeah. And
I don't know if it's fair to criticize a developer for creating new games in a series, as you know, they're running out of ideas, so they're going back to the same setting that the last one was successful in. I know Infinity Ward has pretty much said they don't want to do any more World War II because they did that for so long. They wanted to move out and do something else. But I mean, World War II is like, you know, it's the last war where, like, you know, there were really good guys and bad guys. There was no gray area about it, really. So that's, you know, kind of the go-to for a lot of games. And I mean, like, Brothers in Arms, Highway to Hell is a really well-done game, but it's World War II. So it's just a setting. It's not necessarily that they're out of ideas. It's just a setting that everyone can identify with, and that's really why there's so many of those games.
I mean, you look at Valve, what they've done. We were talking about this in our last podcast. Like, other than Left 4 Dead, which hasn't technically released yet, everything they've done from Portal to TF2... I mean, Counter-Strike, they pulled people from the community, like map editors and modders, you know, to create their big hit games, right? So it's just a matter of your business model, how you conduct yourself, and you know, where you look to for ideas, rather than just, you know, yeah, I guess that's what I'd emphasize. I don't know.
Hi, thanks for being here. I hear lots of people say, oh, PC gaming is going to die. And I'm thinking there's two reasons why it might be kind of, that might push it that way. One is games that limit what type of hardware you can use. Like Battlefield 2, you couldn't set your resolution very high. And the other thing is games which are going to nickel and dime you. Like I hear Battlefield Heroes, they're going to charge you for your new skins, your new weapons. Are those types of games going to ruin PC gaming? What do you think?
I don't think games that rely on microtransactions are going to ruin PC gaming. I think that's definitely a trend we're seeing a lot more of. They're giving you a game for free, and then, you know, you don't have to get the new costumes and stuff. But, you know, over however many years you play it, you might spend $30 on all the microtransaction stuff. And also the stuff that they talked about, like for Battlefield Heroes, you know, whatever you buy isn't going to affect the actual gameplay.
May or may not, because I mean, yeah. there is some. They have said that that you can buy things that will increase your increase the rate you earn experience with. But at the same time, I mean, it is a free game, so it's you are kind of looking at a gift horse in the mouth if you say, well, you're giving me this for free, but then, you know, I'd have to pay for extra stuff. But and you're getting the full game for free, so I mean that model came out of. You know, them being worried about piracy, it's like, you can't steal it because we're giving it to you. But I don't see that destroying anything. I see it as like an alternative model. I think there will be both. It's a little bit doom and gloom to predict it's going to die over any one thing. I mean, if something works, it works. It makes PC gaming better. If it doesn't, then they'll give it up and go back to the old model.
I mean, there are a lot of free shooters upcoming: Quake Live, Battlefield Heroes, Parabellum. Combat Arms is out already.
Yeah.
I really hope a lot of people embrace it. For me, I've been playing in the Battlefield Heroes beta. It's just so easy to just get into the game and start playing that, you know, I play it at lunch, I'll play it, you know, right before bed. It serves kind of the purpose that Peggle did for me for a while. It's just a disposable experience that I can pick up between anything else. So I hope a lot of people embrace it. It's good.
So Company of Heroes has this playtest beta where you can play the game as they tweak it before they actually patch it. Company of Heroes. So I was wondering what you think about that and if other games should start doing that.
So you're asking, what do you think it's a good idea to have people play the beta before the patch goes out live? Yeah, and it's basically free beta testing for the company, and players, people get to play the game before it goes out, which everyone wants, you know, all the impatient people. Right. Okay. So it's like the patch itself, not the game. So yeah, people, as long as people are willing to help them test out the game, that's only going to make the game better. So, you know, they get the feedback from those players that you know, see the balance adjustments and take that into account. Like, if the community thinks it's a bad idea, then maybe they won't do it, or maybe they say, mortars need to be nerfed, so they'll go in and do that. So the more community feedback they get, the better. Because otherwise they put the patch out, and then they get the feedback, and people are pissed off at them. So it's a good idea. You obviously already have Company of Heroes. Autographed Supreme Commander with Chris Taylor's signature on it.
This guy's popular in South Dakota. And he works for the FBI.
No wonder.
All right, at NVIDIA's NVision, they had a presentation about multi-screen or multi-touch screen technology. Is there any talk about integrating that with PC gaming, or like using it for RTSs, or?
I know a guy who plays Counter-Strike on one of those HP Touch Smarts. I think it's kind of cheap because, bam, headshot.
I think
at the same time, that's much slower to do, right? It's slower to do that than to just flick your wrist a little bit. You have to be really good to flick your wrist that fast and that accurately. But
I don't think we're going to see a lot of games natively support that for a little while. I think you're going to see mods support it. It's because the hardware.
He says Flight Sim 10 does on or Flight Sim X does on multi-touch.
And Windows 7, when that comes out, I mean, multi-touch is going to be a big part of that. It's going to be built in natively to Windows 7, and so we're going to see, because that's going to be in there, you know, there's going to be a lot of hardware SKUs.
Yeah.
Like Supreme Commander or RTSs, like, of that sort, where you can really utilize the multi-touch.
Yeah.
Is there...
I was just going to say, like, I think that would be an absolute godsend for a game like
I think it'd
Supreme
be great.
Commander.
I did a column about it a few months ago, about the potential of, like, Microsoft Surface, like, the demos they've shown. It's like, imagining what that would be like in RTS. And there was a guy who put out a video of playing Warcraft 3 on a similar setup. Although it wasn't using multi-touch, so it was kind of a hassle for him. But basically the conclusion I came to was that it will be great in that it will kind of immerse you more in the game. It's like it'll be much more hands-on experience, really. It removes a layer of abstraction from playing the game. Because you actually get to say, okay, I want these guys and I want them to go here instead of click, 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 click. On the other hand, in at least competitive play, speed is really a factor, and it's going to slow you down a little bit, because doing this, moving your hand around the screen is much slower than flicking the mouse around. So
makes you feel like you're in Cowboy Bebop.
Yeah, it will have to be all or nothing, I think. Everybody's going to have to use that, or nobody can. In competitive play, otherwise it's just not going to work. But I think it's going to be great. The other hurdle, of course, is you're going to have to buy a whole new screen. It's going to have to be big enough to work with. So that's going to be expensive. So it'll be a while before we see that happen. Sound like an RTS gamer? Would you like Company of Heroes?
Yeah, hopefully it'll lead to an awesome crossover called Supreme Commander Minority Reports. The game to...
The movie.
Yes.
The ride.
The ride.
With Sony and Microsoft's consoles becoming more like PCs, many peripherals, media center functions, stuff like that, do you see them becoming a branch of PCs and then consoles being more like the Wii and spin-offs of that in the future? Or how do you think the future is going to tend with really expensive high-end consoles?
They're already pretty much halfway there. I think the next generation of consoles pretty much isn't going to be able to get by without having a mouse and keyboard, because they're going to have to be, internet devices as well. I mean, that's got to be like the next selling point. It's like, this is a cheap device you can get that you can read your email on and you can play games. I think that's they can't really get away with not doing that next time around. So there is a lot of convergence going on.
And I also think, too, that consoles are going to be taking a step away from the Wii gameplay. As successful as it's been, Nintendo has already said that their next console is going to be something entirely different. And I'm not sure if that means that they're going back to the gamepad or if they're going to stick with motion sensing. But I'm not so sure that that's something that will be something that'll stick around. Because admittedly, like it's a fun system, but you know, if you own one and you are like swatting at bugs for a few hours each day, it's kind of like, man, I just want to play a game. It's leisure, you know.
It's moving around is hard work.
It is. Oh, come on, you don't want EverQuest?
I kind of want EverQuest. Well, yeah.
I'm more of a WoW man.
With games improving quality and pushing more information through our systems and our systems getting faster, they're getting hotter. Things are heating up faster, getting harder to cool, and cool quietly. So do you guys see a revision in ATX coming up anytime soon that will allow moving hardware around so that you can get better airflow, quieter systems without having to go to water cooling or anything like that?
It'd be nice.
It's really interesting, actually. Didn't they try that with BTX?
They tried that with BTX. It never took off. I mean, the problem is that there's so much existing hardware that you'd have to basically, it'd have to be completely proprietary. And a good example is like the Voodoo Omen, which it's completely custom. They basically rotated the ATX board so the airflow goes between the cards and goes up, and that's completely optimized. But you're not going to see that being standardized anytime soon.
Yeah, the problem is you've got to get the entire industry to accept a new standard, which is easier said than done.
It could easily be done with existing hardware. You just have to get the case manufacturers and motherboard manufacturers to agree on standardized areas where to put, say, your graphics cards or your CPU sockets and stuff like that to optimize and quickly and easily optimize the airflow and cooling.
Right, that's exactly the problem they had with BTX. They couldn't get the motherboard manufacturers and the case manufacturers to work together. So there were just so few products available for BTX that it never took off.
Even Dell's gone off of BTX. I never thought that would happen.
Thanks, guys, for coming out. I have a question: what you guys really think about co-op gameplay and it being a necessity in these newer FPSs that are coming out? For instance, Crysis is an amazing game, and I love it. But so sometimes I feel cheated that it doesn't have a co-op version of the game, or even see a lot of mods come out for games like Doom 3 and Half-Life 2 that allow co-op gameplay throughout the main storyline. And then the reverse side of it, do you think that can also hinder games like you play games like Kane and Lynch that have co-op gameplay that's just a joke? And do you guys think that these things are, I mean, is co-op the future of games? I mean, do you feel that without it, it's going to be lacking? It's going to hit the reviews pretty hard without it?
I personally really hope that co-op continues to catch on, because the first game that I ever played that really got me into video gaming was Marathon by Bungie way back in the day. And my fondest memories are playing that on co-op. In fact, I still play it today. And it seemed like it really disappeared for a while. And then games like Army of Two, sue me, I liked it. coming out. And Call of Duty World at War is going to be having co-op. And stuff like that really makes me excited to see that. So I hope that it almost does become a necessity. But I don't want players to be forced to have to. Because having an AI teammate like an Army of Two worked out pretty well. But, it's a blurry line.
There is a greater more attention being paid to co-op play. In fact... I guess two recent EA games, Mercenaries 2 and I guess Red Alert 3 is coming out very soon, both of those have co-op in them. Mercenaries 2, buggy as it is a lot of fun, and it has very easy drop-in multiplayer, which is cool, but co-op. I think it's definitely, it's great to have extra features. It's a matter of, and with a game like Crysis, they put a lot of time into just developing a really elegant single-player experience, and you have to redesign a lot of things to make it work well in co-op, because they have to like widen corridors and things like that so two people can work in there, and there is a lot of redesign that goes into it. Well, so it's just more work, I think.
Because Halo managed to keep the same gameplay throughout. Halo 3 managed to keep the same story and all the design of the levels the same. I think if they
They designed the game from the get-go to be co-op.
Right, but I'm just saying if they made it if they had just like a difficulty meter they could turn up, when more players come in or something. Because I agree, I think Crysis would be absolutely fantastic with co-op.
There's certain games I could see without it, like, for instance, BioShock. I couldn't imagine actually playing that co-op, even though it's an amazing first-person shooter. We all had our time with Halo when it first came out, and the co-op really feels like it's... For me, I feel cheated without it around, so...
I agree. I'm completely with you. Co-op to me is
just... You don't like Left 4 Dead.
Exactly.
Yeah. Left 4 Dead's going to be great. Yeah, I can't believe I didn't mention that.
Don't give that man a deal.
When's Left 4 Dead coming out again? November? Mid 17th?
November 17th.
Yeah, cool.
Welcome. Thank you. Wanted to ask a couple of questions. One, Norm, is there anything here at Showdown Land that you have licked?
No.
No.
I've taken a vow of non-licking.
Anything or anyone?
No.
No, nothing.
Except for this water bottle.
Except the water bottle. And is there anything on the horizon for the ultimate cheeseburger?
Still recovering.
Still recovering. Okay. The real question I had was, I'm interested in your feeling on your position in the industry. I mean, with Games for Windows, the magazine going away, is it becoming more increasingly difficult to get the voice that's out in the industry? I mean, as I listen to you guys weekly, both magazines, you make my drive. You know, it gave me something to think about, and it's so important. And I'm wondering if it's becoming more difficult to have that forum out there where you have big companies, EA, buying everybody, doing something. Is there still, do you feel any challenges? What does that do for you?
I guess, first of all, you don't have to worry about the magazine going away. We're going to be here for the foreseeable future. So, in terms of, I'm a little bit confused on the question. Are we having trouble like speaking our minds on the bigger companies? Is that the question?
Do you run into any difficulties, either not necessarily with the vendors, but just I don't know what troubles do you run into, or what difficulties do you have as editors, as speakers, as people that we listen to and trust everything about? Is there anything that you come across that you find are difficulties in the industry that you'd like to see changed?
I guess from the perspective of working in print, it is increasingly difficult to get news out at a time when it's still going to be relevant to you guys. You know, we absolutely want to get our reviews to you in time to make your purchasing decisions. Otherwise, it's still entertaining to read, but you've already bought a game, or it's already old by the time the review hits. So the problem is, it used to be that games took a long time to go, like once they shipped off the gold code, it would take a long time to be duplicated and shipped off to stores. Now that time has gotten less so it is difficult for us to get the finished game and review it in time to be useful to you guys. But so I'd say that, I mean, yeah, having been running the review section for a little while, I'd say that's the biggest challenge that I've run into. What about you guys?
I mean, obviously, yeah, timeliness for sure is one of them. I'm not sure what else, to be honest. I haven't been here long enough. I've only been here for 2 months. That's my excuse.
But yeah, I used to run the preview section like Evan does now, and it is always tricky to get the developers to come out and give you all the information that you need to write an informative preview.